Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much. Good afternoon on this Friday afternoon. Very sad to hear about the death of Lindsay Bennett. Our thoughts are with her family and her friends. And I suppose at a time like this, all the women who were affected by the cervical check debacle, and that's what it was. But today we remember Lindsay Bennett, and she was an activist and an advocate, and 34, far too young, far too young. Anyway, may she rest in peace. You heard that this morning. Niall Quinn, at 56, got his degree from DCU, a master's in history he got. And there's pictures in the paper today of him with his wife and his mother. And he promised his mum, after leaving school, to go and play football, before he did his leaving cert, that he'd get a degree. And he's a man of his word. And he went back and he did it. And he did his project on Oscar Traynor. Now, I didn't know this about Oscar Traynor. I knew he was a politician. He was the Minister for Justice back in the late 50s and early 60s. But he was the man, according to Niall Quinn, and he's done his project on him, that was responsible for allowing people to play Gaelic football or hurling and soccer. Because there was a time in this country that if you donned a GAA jersey, you weren't allowed to don a soccer jersey. And still, I remember in the 70s and 80s, it still was a bit frowned upon. But Oscar Traynor, anyway, is the man who Niall Quinn credits with changing all that, which is a very good thing. So congratulations to Niall Quinn on his master's degree. And congratulations as well to Trim, the winners of this year's Super Value Tidy Towns competition. Trim, County Meath. Trim and Tidy, yes. It was one of the highest number of entries ever. In its 65-year history, with entries from 882 towns and villages across the country. And people will be flocking to Trim this weekend for the Pooka Festival. Imelda May was on the other day telling us about it. She's headlining tonight on the Pooka Festival main stage. And Joanne McNally's there, and David O'Doherty, and loads of acts. Well done as well to Ross Carberry, which is a beautiful part of the country, West Cork. That was named Ireland's Tidiest Village. They've the raw material to work with, you know, the sea there and the lovely little square and the church and all those sort of things. But well done to both Ross Carberry and Trim, and to everybody else who won the various awards in the Super Value Tidy Towns competition. Congratulations, congratulations. Can we play a bit of we will, yeah, just because it's Friday and all that, yeah.
Congratulations and celebration.
Thanks, Liv. That's enough. That's enough of that. Written by Phil Coulter. He'll get a few quid now from replaying that on the radio. That's the way it works. Emails overnight. One from Mags. She said, I just want to find out the music or video on YouTube that Ray used to calm his dog. I have a friend in the UK whose dog is frantic, and I would like to pass on the information to her. Mags. This is the music you talk of. Or even speak of. Now, Mags, there are loads to choose from on YouTube. The reason we chose that particular one was that it was 9 or 13 hours long. 9 or 13... Anyway, enough to keep them going throughout the night. Some of them are only 3 hours long, which means you'd have to set the alarm to get up at 3 o'clock to go down and put it on again, which would defeat the purpose of the whole thing. So when you're on to your friend in the UK, tell her to Google dog calming music. And then when she finds it, to go to the one that's either 9 or 13 hours, and she will find that. There's a lovely little white puppy. That's the visual for it, but that's the sound. 4 days in a row, fingers crossed. 4 days in a row. It's worked. It's worked, yeah. Brilliant. Happy birthday to two beautiful ladies, C.T. Dwyer from Beaumont and Marie Brennan from Clontarf. Both of them are celebrating their 99th birthdays next week. Maiden names, Cronin. Would they be twins? Yes, they must be twins. I was trying to figure that out. Of course, yes. So, they're Cronins originally. 99 next week. Born in Middleton. Maeve says, happy birthday to you both. C.T. Dwyer, Ní Cronin. And Marie Brennan, Ní Cronin. 99, that's brilliant. Happy birthday to you. And from that, this is the circle of life. Could you mention my daughter Grace, who turns 2 today? We love listening to the show in the afternoon. That's Chase and Grace in Galway. There's a nice duo of a name, Chase and Grace. Happy birthday, Grace. Hope you enjoy Halloween. It was, there's something about today, because I know it's not Halloween, that's on Monday, but today's the day that the schools finish up for the midterm and the Halloween midterm. So what happens today, in case you don't know, everybody gets dressed up. So there were ghouls and goblins and sumo wrestlers and dinosaurs and vampires, dead Elvises, and all sorts of things walking to school today. And it was just, and it was a lovely morning as well, lovely and mild. That's another thing, isn't it? Like, I see they were getting temperatures at 20 degrees centigrade yesterday in the UK. Like, that ain't natural, folks. Anyway, back to the happy stuff. Halloween. And it's just, it must be such a joyous occasion in schools. I could see in a few years' time, lads, Halloween taking over Christmas as the favourite holiday of the year. What do you think? What do you think, yeah? And this weekend, big weekend, of course, a couple of things happening. Well, more than a couple of things happening. It's a long weekend, bank holiday weekend. The Dublin City Marathon is back after a two-year hiatus, and 25,000 people will be taking to the starting line on Sunday to run 26.2 miles. We have three of them in with us later on. And I was saying to somebody during the week on the quiz that if you are around, that it is, even if you're not going to, you know, it is one of those special events. Go out and cheer people on. Bring a few jellies or whatever, or just your voice and just yourself. But you'll get pulled into it. It's just, there's something about it. There's an energy about it. And a lot of people who run marathons all over the world say that Dublin is the best because of the support. There's a guy actually out around Crumlin somewhere, and he sets up a PA system in his garden, playing all the running songs. So I thought I'd help him out, again, put together a little playlist. So running songs, right? At the beginning, you see, it's all about attitude and it's all about the group, because you have 25,000 people there. You know, some of them are doing it for the first time. Some of them have done every marathon since 1980. A lot of nervous energy. So you need to tap into that at the beginning, you know. And you go, yeah, come on. Giant, stand up on my shoulders. Tell me what you see. Good running song. It's a good running song. Here we go. They're up and going, down the Keys and into Phoenix Park, and they're riding like the wind, yeah. Oh, on to Chapel Lizard, that hill at Chapel Lizard, oh my God. So the halfway mark is somewhere around Crumlin, then you're up Dartry Road and around there, and it's getting tough now because you've 13, 14, 15 miles done and oh, you're feeling the burn. Oh, it's hard work, yeah. On to Clonskee, the back of UCD, and then you turn around, you know it's coming, that hill, Heartbreak Hill.
Running up that hill, be running up that building.
past the 20 mile mark. You can't see it, but in your mind's eye, you can see the finish line. You're drawing on everything you have. Now you're in the city centre and crowds are roaring your name because you've written across your t-shirt, "Go John, go Mary, go on Pat, you can do it, you can do it, you can do it."
You really don't remember.
Go on Gloria. I don't know if there's a Gloria running even. 25,000. I'm sure there's one Gloria. What do you think? Yeah, yeah. Go on Gloria. And it's the final 500 metres. And you can see people you know in the crowd calling your name, shouting you on, giving you encouragement. Your feet are hurting. Your lungs are hurting. Your head's hurting. But you got there. You finished the Dublin City Marathon.
I got my hair, got my head, got my brains, got my ears, got my eyes, got my nose, got my mouth. I got my smile. I got my tongue, got my chin, got
good luck to everybody taking part. And we've three participants coming in. Pat and Robbie and Mary. And they all have really interesting stories to tell. Looking forward to chatting to them. We'll be expecting Jaffa Cakes at Heartbreak Hill on Sunday, Ray. Don't mind the fast lads. It's us slow lads and lassies that need the sugar. That's Sean Kilkenny. Yeah. Looking forward. I've missed it for the last few years. And we missed it a good few years. So we'll be back up at the top of Heartbreak. Heartbreak Hill on, I was nearly going to say hotel, Heartbreak Hill on Sunday. Deadly, bring it on, says Louise. Hi Louise. And on the dog calming thing, I've tried all the dog calming apps to no avail. The only sounds that keep my dogs calm when home alone, Lyric FM. It works a treat, just love it. That's from Joan in Waterford and Dolly and Daisy, the Lyric loving pooches. Looking forward to seeing you and Jenny at the top of Heartbreak Hill with Jaffa Cakes. God, we feel, yeah. That's from the Balbriggan Runners. How are you doing, Paul? And the street beside that creche, or our creche, was gassed today. Two vampires, a dinosaur, and a witch crying. Ireland's biggest Halloween festival is back this year in Derry. Great ad on the telly for it. The city is buzzing. Give us a shout out. That's Gareth and Derry. It's called Derry Halloween. How did they come up with that name? And can you wish my sister Anne Walsh a happy retirement. She worked as a special needs assistant at the presentation school in Clonmel, County Tip. Love from Sheila and Caroline and all the family. Enjoy the celebrations, Anne. Do you see, just before we get to the first song, that they're scrapping light-saving time in Mexico. They voted on it. And this Sunday in Mexico will be the last time that the clocks change. So they're reverting back to God's clock. So the winter time would be normal time, God's time, you know, the time that would have been before they start messing with the clocks. So in Mexico, they've decided for health, personal safety and energy saving reasons and benefits to just leave it like that for the whole lot. There's talk every year, and there was talk, wasn't there, about a vote in the EU and all that sort of thing, but it's just talk. OK, of all those songs, I think the one that we'll play in its entirety is this one, because I felt good when I heard it this morning. 51551radio.ie. I'll tell you about our quiz in a moment, but first, Laura Branigan, it's a banger, Gloria, on RTÉ Radio 1. Tony from Middleton Betts is doing the marathon on Sunday. Give him a shout out, says Chris. Done. I'm doing the marathon on Sunday, but got injured in August. I've decided just to go out and walk and forget about trying to improve my previous times. I'm really looking forward to it now that I'm not putting pressure on myself. It will take around 5 hours, but I intend to enjoy it as a mindful marathon. And Stephen, no name with that one, but Stephen and Kel says, now I'm pumped for Sunday. I must put that playlist up somewhere so nobody can listen to it. Please give a big shout out to Brendan Lachlan and all of Brendan's running club in Nace from Leo and Fitzy, first time marathoners. in the group. And that's so funny, says Elaine. You're talking about the Dublin Marathon and Mexico. I'm doing the marathon on Sunday and I'm going to Mexico the next day on Monday for a holiday. What a coincidence, Elaine. Yahoo! Good luck to everyone. That song's amazing. Packing for our trip to Lanzarote tomorrow. So excited. It's a good packing song as well. It's a good packing song, is that. That's Ciara. Enjoy the holiday. Now, it's a bank holiday. We're back on Tuesday. And on Tuesday, Kelly Harrington is coming into us. And Roddy Doyle, who helped her write her biography, will be here as well. The book is called Kelly. Now, we did this on Tuesday for Jeff Kinney and Diary of a Wimpy Kid, and it worked out really well. We invited fans to send in voice notes, and then we played them for Jeff, and there was a lovely energy about it. So we're going to do the same for Kelly. Kelly Harrington, sporting hero, national treasure, lovely person, in with us on Tuesday, and we'd love you just to, you know, send best wishes or questions or comments for Kelly. It'd be great. And Roddy's going to be here as well. A voice note. So it's 087 114 7899. So write that down. You have the whole weekend to compose something. And you can have a good few takes. Take 15. Kelly, I'm John here. And I just want 087 114 7899. 087 114 7899. And send us a voice note on WhatsApp. You just record it on your phone, you're on WhatsApp, you send it off to us. They were able to do it, 8, 7-year-olds, for Jeff Kinney. Surely you can do it for Kelly Harrington. It'd be great to get a number of them in and play them out to Kelly then, which is here on Tuesday. So I'll remind you about that before the end of the programme. But first, I better tell you about today's quiz. Yep, we're looking for two people to come on this Friday afternoon and answer three questions each on songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. Great prize this week. It's a two-night stay for two in Carton House, which is the first Fairmont hotel in Ireland. Now, Carton House is surrounded by over 1,000 acres of sweeping parkland, ancient woodlands. There are lakes and there's a meandering river called River Rye. In making it the most picturesque backdrop even for an autumn stay. And it's 25 minutes from Dublin. So you get the two-night stay, you're staying in the garden wing, breakfast in the house on both mornings and dinner in the atmospheric Kathleen's Kitchen on one evening. Cartonhouse.com for more information. That's cartonhouse.com for more information. Okay, two people after 4 o'clock. Here is your qualifying question this Friday. Kelly Harrington will be here with Roddy Doyle on Tuesday's show. Is Kelly Harrington a boxer or a wrestler? Is Kelly Harrington a boxer or a wrestler? 0818 715 925. 0818 715 925. Could be talking to you after 4 o'clock.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, yesterday and this morning, the world got a first glimpse of the highly anticipated memoir from Prince Harry. The title is Spare. They're saying it's a tell-all book. It's expected to address the strains of Harry's life in the public eye. And it's going to hit the shelves a little bit later than planned, January 10th, 2023. So what can we expect and how explosive will it be? Former BBC Royal Correspondent Jenny Bond joins me now on the line. Good afternoon, Jenny.
Hi there, Ray.
Good to talk to you again. So the last time we were talking, actually, we haven't spoken since then. It was 10 past three or thereabouts. I don't know if you've realised this, but the Queen was dying while we were on air.
Yes, I do remember.
Isn't that a bit spooky, really? So this, as I say, it's been postponed because of the death of Queen Elizabeth II. Has anybody got to see inside it yet?
Oh, no. This is very much under wraps. You know, it's very carefully managed release of this book. But what we saw yesterday and in the papers this morning, I actually found quite shocking when I saw the cover with Harry's face, just looking at real close up of his face, looking straight to camera, and the one word, spare. I thought it was like throwing down the gauntlet. Mm. It was like a boxer coming in the ring with a real left hook to the chin, saying, look, there's nothing conciliatory about this. I feel sidelined. I've always felt marginalised. I am basically a victim of my birth. That's how it came across to me.
Yeah, but there is that phrase, isn't there? The heir and the spare. And was that a derogatory term?
Well, no, it's never been the derogatory term.
No.
I mean, Diana herself used it. You know, she said, I provided an heir and a spare. If you think about it, it's not a very nice way to be described. But nevertheless, it smacks. It's a little bit juvenile, I think. It's almost like a younger sibling saying, oh, you know, you've got the best toys, or you can stay up later because you're older.
Yeah.
You know, he would have had a very valid, frontline, important job within the royal family, but he felt that he was second best, I suppose.
Mm. So himself and Meghan turned their back on the royal family in 2020. 40 million is reported that he got as an advance for this book. That's a huge amount of money, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, these figures are being abandoned about. We don't know, but it was certainly a multi-million pound deal and a multi-book deal. It's either two or three books he's expected to provide for this. And, we must be fair, quite a large tranche of the proceeds. Well, he says all the proceeds are going to charity. But, of course, if you write books, you know, yeah, the proceeds are one thing, but the advance you get is something
quite different.
Something different, yes. Yeah.
And he, there's loads of mention of mental health, and he's writing it for his own mental health. So it's going to be cathartic and nearly therapeutic. Is that what you think?
Yeah, and I think we'll get quite a lot of therapy, Californian sort of therapy speak, if you like. But we must, I mean, you know, the man has fragile mental health caused by a trauma in his adolescence, such as none of us can imagine.
Mm.
You know, his mother not only being killed in a car crash, but then having to publicly mourn her at such a tender age. He was only 12.
Yes.
I mean, I was with Diana when Harry was about 10, and we were talking about the boys. And she actually said then it was William who found his destiny hard to confront. He had told his mum, oh, people already treat me like a king. I don't like it. And Diana said, but Harry's actually fine. Everything seems to bounce off him. And that was always the view at the palace. You know, Harry's fine. But the trauma of the death of Diana when he was only 12, just going on 13, damaged him and his health, mental health severely. And I think this is the result of it. And it, as he says, or the publicity blurb says, this is a journey from trauma to healing, from and how grief can be overcome by love.
Meghan's love.
Well, one assumes that, yes.
Yes. A lot was made of the fact that when the Queen died, that they were going to postpone the publication of the book. And some people were asking whether he would change anything in the book because of the Queen dying.
Yep. I mean, let's face it, none of us knows what's in this book.
Yes.
But we were all happily saying, oh, yes, he's rewriting it and what have you. I mean, the latest report is actually it's just going to have a small note saying this was written before the death of the Queen.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't know if it's true. Or have they been going through changing all the tenses? Has he had a new paragraph or chapter written about the funeral? We simply don't know.
Yeah. J. R. Moringer, who wrote one of the best sports biographies ever, that of Andre Agassi, is the ghostwriter on this, so it's high end.
It is high end, and I think that both the title and the cover picture bear the hallmarks of the ghostwriter as well, because Agassi's, if you've seen it, the front cover is again the face of Agassi looking straight out and one word, open. So that's a style that he's adopted. So maybe we're wrong to him. Impute such motives to Harry as we are, that he was trying to shock everyone. But nevertheless, it does come over as a dig really at his brother as well, you know, straight away. You are more important than me.
Mm. Of course, when he wrote it, his father wasn't the king. And so anything he would say that would be negative about his dad is now about the King of England, which puts it in a different context completely.
Well, it does, but I mean, it's going to be quite hard to paper over the cracks that have opened up between Harry and Charles. I think, you know, I'm led to believe that Charles has been making overtures to bring his son back into the fold. I mean, emotionally, not practically. He's not going to come over here again, I don't think, and take up his royal duties. But yes, it's going to. It is like a sort of Damocles, I think, hanging over Charles and William and Camilla and the whole royal family until January the 10th. And we see just what Harry has felt he must say. No one's going to rest easy.
It's odd because, like, out of manners, just like plain human manners. If you were writing about people in your family, you would probably want them to read it before it was published.
Yes, but I don't think he's extended that to
him. He's not going to do that, right?
No, I don't think so, and I don't think the publishers would want him to. I think the problem with a memoir like this, and let's face it, other royals have written their story. Diana, her true story, the Morton book, almost brought the House of Windsor down, quite frankly. That's what Andrew Morton told me when that came out. He said the House of Windsor is in danger of collapse. Then we had Fergie's book, The Duchess of York. We've had the Duke of Kent has recently written his memoirs. The trouble is, on something as pointed as this and so personal as this, as the Queen herself said, recollections may vary.
Yes.
This is Harry's side of the story.
Well, they do, of course. Sure, yeah. There's scientific studies on memory and how it, and even the veracity of memories, you know, because we our brain works in mysterious ways and it replaces memories with new stuff, you know.
That's
so
right.
Yeah. It's going to be like it's going to sell, like you know.
Oh yes, it will sell. Of course, yes, we will all read. And it's actually very important to hear what Harry has to say. And I have a lot of sympathy with a man who has suffered such fragility in his mental health, and perhaps he needs this bloodletting or whatever it is to protect that mental health, and regain a balance in his life. But I just hope it doesn't hurt too many people along the way.
Mm. And they'll survive it. The royal family will survive this. They'll survive worse things.
Oh, yeah, they have. It's just.
Are you shocked by that 40 million? I'm just looking at the figures there. They got 100 million from Netflix, and now 40 million reported for this. It's a lot of cash.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know how true it is, but it is going to be a lot of money. But you see, they say they need this money for their security over there, and I suppose for their lifestyle. Though, you know, I don't know who needs 16 bathrooms and a great big mansion in California. I don't know really who needs that much money. They have millions between them anyway, but clearly they feel they need more.
Hmm. We leave it there, Jenny Bond. thank you very much. We'll talk again. Thanks, Jenny.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Right, as I was saying, this weekend the Dublin City Marathon returns with 25,000 people running around the streets of Dublin. 26 miles or 26.2 miles or 42.5 kilometres, whatever you're having yourself. Some take part for a love of running, some to raise money for charity, and some to accomplish a personal goal. Whatever the reason, it's a huge accomplishment for those who cross the line at the end. In studio with us today, three very different runners with three very different stories. We've Mary Hickey. Mary is one of the few people who's run every Dublin City Marathon since 1980, and she's the only female runner to hold this record. Good afternoon, Mary.
Good afternoon, Ray. How are you?
Good to see you again. I'm good. We have Pat McMahon. How are you doing, Pat?
Hi, Ray.
Pat is running his first marathon. What makes him different from most other runners is that Pat is running completely barefoot. I don't know what's the difference between barefoot and completely barefoot, but you're completely
no shoes
barefoot.
Anyway.
You know, no shoes involved. And you're raising money for Mothers First, which you will tell us about in a moment. Thanks for coming in, Pat. And finally, we have Rob Whiteley, who's from Naas. And Rob began his running journey whilst in active recovery. And he has taken part in marathons all over the world, and he's running on Sunday. Good afternoon, Rob.
How are you, Ray? How's things?
Good to see you.
It's good to see you too, Ray.
We ran together before.
We did indeed, yeah.
We did. We did the recovery run.
Yeah, that's right. We did the recovery run, yeah.
So that was, how long ago was that? I'm trying to think. It was the year before last.
Yeah, that's right. I think it was in 2021, yeah.
We did that.
So.
Tell us about the recovery run. Just remind us about it.
Yeah, well, the recovery run, you know, it was set up by Austin, a mutual friend of me and you, me and yours. And yeah, it's basically a bunch of lads in recovery, basically celebrating recovery, you know. Lads that couldn't walk at one stage, you know, from, you know, reasons that comes with active addiction. You know, people couldn't be homeless or you know, all things that comes with active addiction. And you know, getting involved in the run and running as a group and going out and doing a half marathon, you know, running across Dublin to celebrate recovery. And I think the whole idea of it was just to kind of run through disadvantaged areas kind of and show people that recovery is possible. And you know, and, you know, people might see that, oh, geez, there's your man, you know, he used to be in a bad way, and look at him running there now. So.
And you were one of those people who was in a bad way.
Yeah, absolutely, Ray, yeah. I got, that's kind of where my life went, you know, is that I got involved in using drugs in my teenage years, and I went with that for a good few years, and as a result of it, you know, I ended up in a bad place. It resulted in me being homeless, and my family not talking to me, and friends not talking to me, and people who was across the road when they seen me, you know.
Yeah.
But at the end of it, you know, I just made a decision one day. I kind of got an overwhelming feeling, you know, of self-worth, which I didn't feel in years, you know, and I just said, I really just can't do this to myself anymore, you know. I just can't do this, and I'm going to take a stand. And from there on, then, I reached out, and I managed to get myself in somewhere for a while, into a rehabilitation centre, and I completed that, and I came back out into the big bad world then, in recovery. And, so...
Where did that feeling come from, Rob? Do you know? Any ideas?
Yeah, I think it was just... I was just sick of being sick, Ray, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I was just sick of being sick, you know. And I was in a certain town in Kildare, and I remember just seeing, you know, people that I would have known just going by me, you know, and they looked just happy and getting on with their lives. And I just, you know, I thought to myself, geez, look at me, I'm sitting here and I'm in a bad way, you know, and I just can't be doing this to myself anymore. I need to cop on, you know, and... my parents weren't getting any younger either, you know, so that kind of inspired me a bit as well, you know, to try and get my life together, you know.
Would you say, or is this too big a claim, that running has saved your life?
Well,
partly, maybe.
Yeah, well, running has, you know, been a massive game changer for me. When I first entered recovery, you know, the early days can be very difficult in recovery because... you know, before you had substances that were substances that would have been able to help with your mood and stuff, you could choose what way you want to be each day, you know, either up here or down in the middle, you know. But when they're removed, you know, and you're just left with yourself, you know, the head can be very manic. So I was doing everything for my recovery in the early days, like attending meetings, just all the stuff that's suggested to do, but I was kind of missing a piece of the puzzle, and... I found that in running.
Right.
I met Austin one evening, and he was able to identify with me past a bit, and he invited me along with the recovery runners up to the Phoenix Park and to start running with these guys, you know. And sure enough, I went, and I kept going every week.
Brilliant.
Doing these runs and
shared experience, of course.
Yeah.
Now, very few people share the experience of Mary Hickey. How many people have run every Dublin City Marathon, Mary?
I think we might be down to 6 or 7 now at this stage, which is, you know, it's tough to know that as well, because like we were running, there was a lot of us going for a lot, many years, yes. But some of them have dropped away now. So I think there's only 6 or 7. And of course, I'm still the only woman. So
still the only
I'm
woman.
Still here.
Yeah, you're like a flower among weeds. We better name check the others, will we, very quickly. Martin Kelly, yourself, Michael Carlin, Dominic Gallagher, Padder Nugent, Seamus Dunn and Billy Harper.
Yes.
That's 1980 was the first one. Bring us back to 1980.
Well, 1980 was like, I mean, I had only ran one 18-mile run,
right,
which ended in tears. And I just thought, oh, my God, what am I doing? And turned up to the start line of Dublin. And it was like, it literally was like being in the black and white days. You know, we hadn't a clue what we were doing. And off I went. I was 27 at the time. And off I went.
How many runners were there?
There's only 40 women, less than 2,000 people.
And only 40 women?
Yeah, only 40 women. And we were like little aliens because, like, I mean, there was great big fellas looking at us as if to say, what are you doing here on the start line of a marathon? But off I went, and I got up to about 18 miles and everything went wrong. Everything went wrong. My calves seized up. But I managed to keep moving, and I ran on my heels literally for the last 6 miles. I couldn't put my toes down, and got to the finish line and said what everybody always says.
I'll never do that again.
I'm never doing this again. But no, I thoroughly when I recovered, I just said, yeah, that was okay. And I turned up for the second one and managed to break the magical 3 hours.
Wow.
And I just seemed to turn up and turn up and turn up through whatever life throws at you. And my God, it has thrown a lot at me as well. So you say it's great for the mental health.
Yes.
It really, really is. If you can get into a bit of running and walking or whatever, even if it's only 5K, get into the kind of group situation, it really helps. It's great for the mental health.
Tell them what age you are.
I'm 70.
Wow. Amazing. Yeah. Pat was looking at you talking about running on your heels. Pat's running his first marathon on Sunday.
Yeah.
And you're running with no shoes.
I'm running with no shoes.
Why?
I read a report in the United Nations report in 2020, and it said that humanitarian response plans in countries that are severely food insecure were underfunded by between 40% and 60%. So this is literally countries in the Horn of Africa where there is no, they're cutting food, they don't have money to implement water and sanitation programs. And I was just profoundly impacted by that. So I decided in the start of 2021 to start fasting every Monday.
Right.
Which I'm still doing. Every Monday I'm fasting. And then in the March of 2021, I felt I wanted to do something more. So I started barefoot walking. So to commemorate International Women's Day on the 8th of March and World Food Day on the 16th of October. That's what I've been doing. They've been walks. And then the Dublin City Marathon came up and I was like, well, that seems like a thing that I could.
And you did Cairn Toole barefoot.
Did Cairn Toole barefoot.
Right.
Yeah, for World Food Day. And I think what's really interesting is that since I've been fasting, which is maybe a year and three quarters, acute food insecurity, severe food insecurity has actually risen by over 100 million people.
Yeah.
So I was devastated by this report. And then to think that severe food insecurity, this is people who don't have food every day. And when they do, they're big plates of rice. That has increased by 135 million people.
So you're doing it for Mothers First.
For Mothers First,
yes.
Yeah.
And people will see that on your T-shirt when you're running. You used to be a Buddhist monk.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was an amazing, amazing Thailand.
Thailand.
And I literally went for a couple of weeks to stay, and I stayed 2 years.
Right.
An amazing, beautiful experience where we lived in woods. We walked a bendy bat with our bowls every morning, and what the villagers would give us, that's what we would eat. And what we had to give in return was to practice, to meditate and study the Buddhism and the mind. The Buddhism is about the mind. It's kind of self and no self and ego and, you know. So I had two amazing, amazing, beautiful years. And I left mostly.
Why did you leave?
Because I actually felt that I was going to return, but I felt I needed to go back home to my parents and my family and explain what I was doing. And I remember when I disrobed, I made an aditana to myself. An aditana is a Thai word, and it's a commitment to yourself, and a commitment that you'll never break. And the commitment was, if it is my destiny to return, I will return.
Okay.
And from Thailand, I went to India. After Thailand, I went to India, and I got lost in a slum area, and I found a child literally dying of malnutrition. Her name was Tiza, and that started a chain reaction, and you know, I responded to that, and that was 18 years ago. We founded Mothers First, and that's what I've been doing ever since.
Okay. Right. Great work. Mary, the barefooting thing, the barefoot running. Have you ever tried it?
In 1968, when I started running, we used to run all our cross countries in barefoot.
Did you? Yes.
Because
yes.
We didn't have spikes. We couldn't afford spikes.
Yeah.
So, but that was the only barefoot running I ever did, was in the fields, in the snow and that kind of thing. But no, I've never ran on the road barefoot. I have enough injuries now. I don't think I'll risk it.
How many miles have you done so far, Pat? What's your longest run?
I am up to about 12.
Right. Barefoot. Okay, on roads.
On roads, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know. There's more in the tank.
Right.
I'm pretty confident that there's more in the tank.
You'd probably get around. I'm just worried about, you know, coming across a piece of glass, yeah, or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's all about pace. It's all actually what it's all about is the tar to stone ratio. Like I did the Afri Famine Walk in May with Joe Murray.
Right.
And that was 11 miles, and 10 of those were the hardest miles that I ever.
Why were they concrete?
Because it was pure stone.
Yes, yeah.
And what was interesting is that it was actually Kildare man. When it was, he just walked with me because he saw how much I was suffering. And we never even exchanged names, and he walked with me the whole time. And that person there just walking with me was, I don't think I would have completed it without him.
Had he got shoes on?
He had shoes, right. Yeah.
Did you ever try the barefoot, Rob?
No, I can hardly run in runners now, right, to be honest. I wouldn't be into running in barefoot now.
But have you done the Dublin before?
I never did Dublin now. No, this is my first time doing it.
So you've been around the world. You've done, what have you done?
Yes, we were in Italy, France, Portugal and Spain. So,
wow.
Yeah. And
nice. Exotic, Mary.
Nice one.
Yeah, everything bar my own home country,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But
Mary will tell you a bit about the atmosphere, because I was saying at the top of the show that a lot of people who run all over the world say that Dublin is the best. There's something special.
Just something special about Dublin. I don't know what it is, but the crowds just come out. They literally come out and they cheer you on. There's a bit of music here. There's a bit of music there. There's the funniest banners you'll ever see anywhere in the world. There's the funniest comments. But they just support you. They genuinely support you. You can feel it. You literally can feel it.
Yeah.
No matter how bad you are, people will literally support you and try and keep you going. So I've done a few international marathons. I have never, ever felt what you get in Dublin. So...
Yeah.
Looking forward to it. We're going to need all the help I can get on Sunday.
How is your training?
No. My training is non-existent
is it?
This year.
Right, okay.
Two COVIDs and and an Achilles tendon injury.
Oh.
So my training is like non-existent. So it's go to the start line. I'm going to use every minute of the time I'm allowed. And just my aim is to try and make the cutoff. And that's the only ambition I have this Sunday.
What's the cutoff?
I think it's around 7 hours.
We'll be there together.
Yourself and Pat, holding hands.
I'll be dragging you through with your feet. But look, it's going to be great. There's people out there. There's 25,000 beating hearts going to be out there with us.
And
that's 50,000 legs, isn't it? At least. So we'll be well hidden in the crowd, I hope.
Do you feel a bit of pressure because you've done them all?
Well, yeah.
You know, to keep going.
I want to keep going as long as I can, but I don't want... I always said I wouldn't hobble around
it.
Well, guess what I'm going to do on Sunday?
hobble around it.
But I know there's a time when I will stop, but I didn't feel as though it was ready just yet. So we'll make up our mind. It's one day at a time now, 1 mile at a time, one marathon at a time. Dublin will be my last marathon no matter what. So if I can't get to the finish line in this, then it's done.
Yeah.
But if I don't go to the start line, I'll not know.
Rob, because some of your mates must go to you, what are you doing running 26.2 miles? Why would you do that? What do you say to them?
No, you'd get that a lot, but I kind of really enjoy the challenge, like, you know, that type of way. And it's great being part of a kind of a unique amount of people in the world actually runs a marathon, you know. But I actually really enjoy it, but just talking to Mary out there as well. It's kind of all on the day really as well, you know, with... like you could do all the training in the world, but I think with the marathons, it's the last 10K of a marathon is the marathon.
It's
for
six
me.
Miles, yeah, the
yeah,
6 miles,
the last hurdle, you know.
Paying attention, taking notes,
you know, because
people go into their own worlds, don't they? There's very little chatter for the last 6 miles.
It does be very silent, but it's great to you kind of really meet yourself, you know, at that last 10K, and I think. That's why I keep going back and doing it, because I don't think you get that opportunity of going through life to actually go to that place where you have to give it every ounce.
I love that expression. That's where you meet yourself.
Yeah. And
sometimes I suppose people would say I'd run away from that.
You know,
some of us don't want to meet ourselves. Maybe.
Yeah.
Listen, lovely meeting you all. Good luck on Sunday. Are you a bit nervous, Pat, now, or you're relaxed enough?
No, I'm pretty confident. I suppose one thing I'd like to say, the reason that I'm doing this is that we run five camps for malnourished pregnant mothers, and four of them are fully funded through direct debit donations. Okay. So we're asking people, if we had 200 people to donate €5 online or to every month.
What's the address?
So it's mothersfirstcharity.org.
Mothersfirstcharity.org.
Imagine like €5, you won't get a pint for €5 now. So if we had 200 people to set up a standing order for €5, we would be able to deliver food to over 100 malnourished, clinically malnourished pregnant mothers. So I suppose that is the reason
why you're doing it.
That's the call to
mothers
action.
First. Mothers first. Okay.
Mothers first charity.
Pat, good luck on Sunday. First marathon. Mary, good luck on Sunday. So with the two gone, how many have you done in Dublin?
Dublin, this will be 41, I think.
41.
Yeah.
Age 70. Amazing. Yeah. And Rob, thanks for sharing your story.
Yeah,
and good luck. And say hello to all the recovery runners for me.
I will do.
Okay. Good luck. Thank you very much.
Guys.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Grandma, good Marion. Thank you very much. Have a good weekend. 51551 ray at RTE.ie. Fair play to Mary. She's raised loads of money as well as running all around Ireland. Yeah, we had her on the TV show, Noel, when she ran around Ireland. She ran around the coast of Ireland, did Mary. She's done amazing stuff over the years. She's done ultramarathons running 100 kilometres and she's taken on the Dublin Marathon for the 41st time at the age of 70 on Sunday. Give a shout out to all the volunteers who are helping to make this fabulous race happen. I know volunteers who are working today, tomorrow and Sunday. That's Pauline. Happy to do that. And thanks to everybody who gives up their time to make sure the Dublin City Marathon runs smoothly. And Teresa McNamara has been on. Can you wish my baby brother John Corbett a very happy birthday today? He's in Cork. I'm in Toronto. We had a brilliant weekend together in Kildare Town last weekend at our niece's wedding. Congrats to Rebecca and Kev. And that's from Teresa McNamara. Lovely place to have a wedding, Kildare Town. That's a very picturesque place. Highly recommend it if you want to drop in. And, you know, because now that it's bypassed, it's lovely and quiet and the square's lovely and the cathedral's up there and the round tower. And then you can go down to Japanese Gardens, the Irish National Stud, and Kildare Village is there as well. What more would you want? I'm on a retainer from Kildare Tourism. No, I'm not. Okay, let's do the quiz. Here we go. Two quizzers standing by and we have a prize. And it's a two-night stay for two people in Carton House, which is a Fairmont hotel. It's down there, as it happens, in County Kildare, surrounded by over 1,000 acres of sweeping parkland, ancient woodlands, lakes and the meandering River Rye. Picturesque backdrop for an autumn stay, 25 minutes from Dublin. And you can find out more, cartonhouse.com. Thanks to everybody there for helping us out this week, cartonhouse.com. Hello, Will Galvin.
Hello, Ray Darcy.
You are in Meath.
I live in Meath, yes.
Yes, and you were listening attentively to Pat and Mary and Rob because you too are running the Dublin City Marathon.
Yes, but now I feel very inadequate. I am not running it barefoot and I did not run 40 of them.
Yeah. You've no story, Will. Have you done one before?
I did, this will be my sixth now. Yeah.
Ah, yeah, well, great. And you're doing it for Barrettstown, which is a great cause.
It is, yeah. My son has type 1 diabetes and has a bit of a connection down there, so it's great to raise money for them.
How is he? Because that's a, you know, it's a...
He's only been diagnosed in May, but yeah, still learning at the moment, but yeah, he's doing good.
Good, right. So you're looking for me to do a playlist. I have a playlist there. I'm going to put it up on the website if you want to download it. I don't know. It's on Spotify.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, and I've two or three of them that I've done over the years for various runs that we've done, so you can pick and choose. I'll put them up there this evening.
I will. I need all the help
before I go home. Yeah. Time isn't important, or is it important, or what?
It's important that I finish and I get home.
Yeah.
But I wasn't breaking any records, that's for sure. No, we'll be doing about 4.5 hours or something like that. You know?
And would there be anybody along the route to support you?
Say my wife Elaine and the two kids will be out. Riley and Saul will be out supporting me somewhere along the way.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it, to see a familiar face?
Oh, it is. It helps an awful lot.
Yeah. And the children are what, 11 and 8, so did they get dressed up?
11 and 8, yeah.
Did they get dressed up?
All dressed up for school today, yeah.
Go on.
We had a headless horseman and we had a mad looking zombie type of character.
Great. It's great, isn't it? It's great fun. Great fun, yeah. You're up against Anne-Marie Keegan. How are you doing, Anne-Marie?
Hi, Rick.
Good to talk to you. You're just finished shopping in Swords.
That's right, yeah.
And you live in Meath as well?
I do, yeah.
So it's an all Meath quiz today. Now, the line isn't great. Yeah. We'll see what we can do. We'll keep going and we'll see. So who have you got at home?
I have my husband, Jimmy, and my five children.
Five children. Go on.
Yeah. Sean, Colm, Mary-Kate, Isabella and Charlotte.
And give us the ages there, because it's an interesting spread, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Sean is 26, Colm is 23, Mary-Kate is 22, and Charlotte and Isabella are twins, and they are three.
Right, go on.
Yeah, so they were a big surprise 3 years ago.
A big surprise?
Yeah, a good surprise.
But you got married young, yeah.
I was very young.
Yes. That's a great spread, isn't it?
Yeah. I've had plenty of help, Ray. Do you know?
Yes. Yeah. Well, your babysitters there. You have three ready-made babysitters. Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant.
So you've nearly two families there, I think.
I have. Yeah. And it's lovely. It's nearly better the second time around because you've more patience.
And you're comfortable in your own skin, aren't you?
That's it, Ray. Yeah.
You ran the marathon back in 2018.
I did, yeah, and loved it and really enjoyed it now. And I had a ticket for this one, but I didn't get enough long runs in,
yeah.
So I'm not doing it.
Yeah, because I wasn't fit enough. Exactly. Yeah. You don't want to do it when you're not ready, because it'll just put you off it for life, you know. But
it would, yeah.
So
definitely.
I get from you that you'd probably do it again sometime in the future.
I will. I'd love to do it again.
Yeah.
But you have to get the runs in.
You do.
You definitely do.
Yeah, you can follow Pat in barefoot. I do a bit of barefoot running myself, but it's only about half a mile on grass. But the thoughts of doing it 26.2 on tarmac and all sorts of things, that's scary stuff. Okay, now, Anne-Marie and Will, you know the deal. Three questions each. If you go for a long clip, you get a point. Go for a shorter clip, it's more difficult. So you get 2 points, and whoever scores the most points is the winner. However, if it's a draw, we go to a tie-break question. Good luck to you both, and here we go.
Thanks.
Radio. The year is 2014, Will. And we're starting at the movies, so 8 years ago. Do you want to go long or short?
We start off with long.
Long, okay. In 2014, this Disney movie became the top-grossing animated movie of all time. It told the story of Queen Elsa, who accidentally used her powers to turn things into ice. Long clip.
You can't marry a man you just met.
You can if it's true love.
Anna, what do you know about true love?
Well, more than you. All you know is how to shut people out.
You asked for my blessing, but my answer is no.
Ooh. Well, Will.
Frozen.
Yes. You see, I knew you'd know because of the age of your children. But anyway, you went long. You get a point there. Points on the board are important. Now, Anne-Marie, 2014 movies, long or short?
Long, please.
Long as well. Okay, 2014 saw the release of this film that featured a cute but highly intelligent stuffed animal who loves marmalade. Have a listen, see if you can tell us who or what it is.
Aunt Lucy said.
Aunt Lucy. I've had enough to hear with Aunt Lucy.
I may look like a hardened criminal to you, but I really...
Say again?
Paddington.
Paddington, yes.
You could at least help me make this marmalade.
All right, I'll help.
Thank you.
Yes, that's Paddington there. And Hugh Bonneville is on the Late Late Show tonight. He's the star of Paddington. You get a point for that. Okay, even as we go into question number two, Will, it's music from 2014. Long or short?
We'll try short.
Short, okay. An instant hit in 2014. Have a listen and tell us the name of the song and the name of the singer.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say.
That is Pharrell and Happy.
It is. That was huge, wasn't it? Huge. 2 points there for you. Now, Anne-Marie, under a bit of pressure, are you going to go long or short?
Short.
Okay. 2014 hit as well. Have a listen to the clip. See if you can tell us the name of the song or the band.
I don't care if you do.
Coldplay.
It is Coldplay, yes. They have a recognisable sound. Coldplay, Sky Full of Stars. 2 points for you. So it's 3-3. And we're on to the final question for you, Will. It's news and current affairs in 2014. What do you want to do?
We'll go short again.
Go short. Okay, in 2014, a billionaire businessman made headlines when he bought the Doombeg Golf Resort in Clare.
But I think Ireland, first of all, it's great people, most importantly, and it's a great country.
Who's that?
Donald Trump.
It is Donald Trump. 2 points for you. You're on five, can't do any more. Marie, you sort of have to go short, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, in 2014, a certain music superstar announced plans to play 5 concerts at Croke Park. But it wasn't to be.
I will crawl, swim, I will fly over there this weekend. Sit in front of him, I will drop on my knees and beg.
Brooks?
Who's that?
Yes, Garrett Brooks.
Yes, it is. Garrett Brooks, yes. Yes. 2, so it's 5 all. So we're down to a tiebreak question. Not ideal, but that's the way it's landed today. We asked you the question before we went on air. Whoever answers closest to the correct answer is today's winner. I'll just repeat the question now for our listeners. According to Google Maps, how long would it take you to drive from the National Gallery of Ireland in Dublin to Cork Public Museum?
4 hours, 45 minutes.
Hold on. You say... Hold on, I'll go to Will first, because that's the way I have it. You're a player too. So, Will, you said?
I said 3 hours, 46 minutes.
You did. You said 3 hours, 46 minutes. And you said 4 hours, 45 minutes. Anne-Marie,
yeah.
It's 262 kilometres, and the correct answer, if you go via the M7 and M8, is 3 hours and 26 minutes. So, Will, you're closest. Anne-Marie, sorry about that.
That's no problem.
Yeah, and you weren't far out. We're going to send you out a couple of Ray D'Arcy Show mugs, one for Isabella and one for Charlotte. and enjoy the whole Halloween experience with the twins. Okay, see you, Anne-Marie. Bye now. Bye. Well done, Will.
Thank you very much. Anne-Marie was obviously thinking about the M50 there as well.
Say again?
Oh yeah, Anne-Marie was obviously thinking about the M50. She's adding that into it as well.
Yeah. So, listen, cartonhouse.com. Well, if you go there, you'll see what's in store for you, yourself and a person of your choice. Two nights stay and dinner on one of the evenings.
That's brilliant. Listen, brilliant. Thank you very much.
Well done. Enjoy the weekend. See you, Will.
Thank
bye
you,
now.
Right.
Bye.
Thank
bye.
You very
bye.
Much.
Bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Graham Clifford has been on to say the Sanctuary Runners will have 50 of our members taking part in the Dublin City Marathon on Sunday and a big, bright, vibrant cheering zone along the route. That's a great organisation, the Sanctuary Runners. Thanks for that, Graham. Now we're going to get all haunty and Halloween-y with ghosts and ghouls and the undead in a moment. But first, get you in the mood. The Monster Mash. I think it's the first time I play that on the radio. The reason I play that is that we're looking ahead to Halloween. We've been doing it all week with cooking and pooka festivals. But now we have the man himself, Michael Fortune, folklorist, who's going to put Halloween on the map for us. Put it in context. Did we invent Halloween, Michael Fortune?
Well, like I always said, we did know, but we come here to we always say we invent a lot of things in Ireland, you know, but and that's hard to dismiss. We had a huge part to play in the American Halloween experience, without a doubt. We had a massive part to play in it. What we do in Ireland at Halloween, Ray, is there's loads of similarities right across Europe, you know. It's a harvest festival. There's a couple of strands there that you'll see repeated. Our neighbours in Scotland, England, Wales have certain elements. You'll see it in Holland, you'll see it down to Malta, Portugal. There's elements there. When you start joining up the dots, you'll start to see things making sense.
So you've broken it down, like you've called it the Halloween stew. And the ingredients, there are 4 main ingredients of the Halloween stew.
I just kind of looked at it because I was doing talks there recently and I looked at, suppose the first one is harvest, right?
Right.
And speaking of stews, I brought a turnip up here for you here. And just, if the listeners could smell it now, it'd be another thing, right? So
there's an old saying in this business, it doesn't matter who does it first, it's who does it the best. So although the turnip I'm holding might have been the first jack-o'-lantern, the pumpkins look far more appealing, don't they?
Well, they're easier to carve, I'm telling you that.
And they're bigger. And they're a nicer colour, more consistent colour. Although he does look scary, that guy.
He does, and they're cheaper as well, and you can eat the turnip afterwards. that's what we did, honestly. So many people around the country, that's all we had was turnips and a few old sugar beet. And you carved them out and put a little candle in them and went walking the roads with the clothes hangers. And there was no more to it than that, you know. Now, the over in the Isle of Man in Wales, and they do the same as well. Even in Holland, they were doing the same. But our tradition definitely had a huge influence on the American pumpkin carving.
Because there were so many of us went.
Yeah, absolutely. There was an influence there in the mid-1800s. It was an influence went over.
So a number of people lost fingers, obviously, in the carving of turnips. And they looked around the patch and they saw the pumpkins and said, oh, that might be a better bet. Yeah.
I'm telling you one thing, a power drill is a very handy oak when you're carving turnips. Now, I wouldn't give it to a 7-year-old, but that's what I was doing last night. But come here to me, back to the stew at all. I was talking about harvest. One of the things is the harvest festival. So we're going exactly 6 months from the start of May, when we put up our May bush and all that kind of crack, to the summer coming, we're going into the winter. So that's why we went around to people's houses and got nuts and apples and all that kind of stuff. That's why we would have cooked up like Col Canan on Halloween night. And you'll find Col Canan eaten in the country areas. I make it every night, every Halloween night. And it was always made in a big pot, was put on Halloween night.
Is that potatoes and scallions and, and kale?
Now, that's the Dublin version. There's great lovely regional versions of it, right? And I'd find, honest to God, right in the middle of the estates here in Dublin, I was talking to some women there, and they all make Col Canan still. And Col Canan at home, and the same here in Dublin and other parts of the country as well, you'd always slip money into it, like a little coin into it for a child. It was a little luck thing. But our one, it was always spuds, onions, because there's no scallions this time of year. Parsnips was the Wexford key, and we use cabbage. Well, up in Dublin and Mead and all that, you use kale and stuff. But it's the same job.
Posh, whatever, kale.
Fancy kale. But that was it, and you made your barn brax or your barn, you know, whatever you want to call it as well. There was about two.
So it is barn, though, with an M at the end.
Now, come here to me, there's a great divide as well. Like, we're starting rows here now, because I call it barn. More people call it barn because they said it's from barn, from a kind of I think it was a yeast. Some people say it comes from barine, from the Irish word for bread. The word the Irish barra is found in Brittany and Wales as well for bread, for barn. So I think the jury's out that one a little bit, right?
Oh, because I thought there was a definitive answer on it.
Here's a gas thing. I suppose you can't say, if someone says it, they're not wrong. You know that kind of way? I'm a great believer in that. If someone says a cod at a back or a barn,
Right. Just because I say it doesn't mean I'm not wrong. That's a fact.
But come here, harvest was always a big thing. Yeah. So the idea that, and that's done, come here to me. Well, actually, one thing we did as children at home, we always made slow wine. September, we went out to the ditches, picked slows, put them in a glass bottle, dug a hole in the ground and buried it, right? Older people did it. Granny did it at home. Now, she was an out and out pioneer, and it wasn't really, it was pure muck now, really, to be honest with you. But she'd open it up on Halloween night and you'd have a little drink of it.
Right.
And but that kind of idea of tasting the first wine is done down in Portugal and Galicia. The idea of children calling around to people's houses to get nuts and sweets, that's over in Malta. So there's loads of cross European stuff, right?
So I suppose the iteration that exists now and came from America, trick-or-treating and all that, the pumpkins, we can claim a lot of influence on that.
Completely. Okay, without a doubt.
Now, the harvest, the first ingredient, we have to get to three more, Michael. So I'm looking at the clock here. So what do you add in?
One of the biggest things for, I suppose, now, I went up to school today with the little ones going to school and seeing all the little children dressed up.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely magic, right?
Yeah.
The idea that you can put on a few clothes and be something else for the day is magic. That's part of a lovely woman tradition where I get dressed up and I'd call the Darcy's. I might get something in Darcy's house. Then Darcy's would be dressed to kind of figure out who in the image is this fella at all. And
so the woman was you couldn't make out who it was.
Yeah, exactly. You dress up and manage up as a woman.
Yes.
And it was a bit of play. In the past, it was always the older kids went out. Then in my mother's time, it was the more kind of teenagers. And now in our generation, it's all little smallies going out with their mammies and daddies. One thing I want to say, so the idea of dressing up and calling to a neighbour's house, there's magic in that. There's great power in that, you know. It's a great bit of play in it. And sometimes, again, the rural experience can be very different than the city or urban or suburban experience, because I live in the country area and we can call to the neighbours, and the neighbours will know who the little ones are, and sometimes they're actually looking forward to seeing them, you know, that kind of way.
There's
a lovely social community side to it as well, different. So disguise was really important, and again that was done around the country, in pockets around the country, and obviously went to America and came back, and now every primary school in the country had a day like this today.
And of course back in the day you had to do something, didn't you, for your sweets or your money, so you had to sing a song. And you're three, you've three of them.
Three girlines,
and they all begin with N. Go on.
Yeah. Oh no, there's all got no. Nelly, Epi, and Nan.
There's two N's and an E.
Yeah.
And they you recorded this today. This is lovely. This.
Do you like that?
Let's have a listen to Nelly, age 11, Epi, age 9, and Nan, age 7, and they're Michael's kids. And here they are singing Taypot Jack.
Yeah.
All dressed up in old hag's clothes, covered up from our heads to our toes, with a hoogada hoogada Taypot Jack. Tonight you'd better watch your back, with a hoogada hoogada, my mother said. Tonight's for the living and the dead.
Now that's worth a few sweets.
Absolutely. It cost me €12 each, that's it. I always pay the artists,
But now they just dress up and they arrive and they just go,
give me
put out the hand.
Yeah. That's kind of nice. It's nice for children to have a little party trick.
Yeah.
That little thing they were saying, Ray, hugga the hugga the Taypot Jack, there was a lovely, it wasn't, it was a belief was that the souls or the fairies or the people came back in that round around that time, give or take Halloween night.
Because it's All Saints Day the next day.
Yeah, Saints and All Souls the day after then.
Right.
And people believed, like people would leave candles out and believe that the dead came back. I do it myself now. Maybe because we're getting older, we kind of have, people have passed on and we kind of do it, you know, that kind of way.
And is that one of those things that came from a pagan tradition and was sort of moulded into the Christian tradition?
Yeah, there's always layers. Yes,
there's layers.
And sometimes the layers are lovely and sometimes I try to not to strip them back too much because they're kind of lovely the way to do them. One thing I love about All Souls Day is people do it privately in their own homes. Mm. Might leave a little sandwich. Some people would leave a bottle of stout or leave out a sandwich or something for whatever it is for
them. And of course, that's in Mexico as well, isn't it?
Linked up to the
whole
Spanish
November, thing. The day of the dead.
Yeah. And people still do it privately at home. We don't realise they're doing it. But one of the things was in that little song was saying you'd never throw water. And I remember women in Mayo telling me, they'd always say, hugga the hugga the tishka salak. And down in Wexford, far away from Mayo, my mother used to say, hugga the hugga the taypot jack. Because they said, if you threw out anything that night, you'd wet the poor old souls in the water.
Oh, don't be doing that. Don't be doing that. So the games, we're only on ingredient three now, and we've only a minute and a half, Michael. Right. So we've covered four actually, All Souls Day. Yeah, so we can go back. We can. You do a U turn there and back to the.
Yeah. Games are important. Games and a bit of divilment. There was always a little thing where there was. Games, we were trying to divine our future, whether you put the ring in the brack. Years ago, there were loads of different things in bracks. We'd make called cannon, we put stuff into them. We'd even have games where, you know, the saucers are, you put...
Bobbing for an apple. Yeah.
There's one thing which is lovely about Halloween, I find, is the sensations that it creates. The sensation of even a child even putting your head in water and feeling that, or the sensation of going out at dark at night time. You know, that,
When you look, when you say that now, it sort of writes a passage, isn't it? Because they're going out in the dark and they're knocking on people's houses sort of on their own, the parents at the gate, there's a vote. If there was a vote in our house at the moment, I think Halloween would win over Christmas.
Funny you say that, because I had the same from a mother this morning, said the same thing. They're more excited because I suppose there's a social side, there's a community side, especially for the smallies, because they're all their friends. And it's the first festival since all that summer, and they're going back in. And you know, all these festivals were all based around winter, in the darks and depths, when the mornings were
keep
dark.
Keep us entertained.
Keep us going.
Yeah. Michael Fortune, brilliant. That was a whistle stop tour of Halloween.
Okay, good stuff. Yeah. Come here.
We're going to have you on again about that.
Good. No
matter. Is that okay? Because I love that calendar, and we'll talk about that because we've run out of time today. So that's a promise. Shinné, that's it. Thank you very much. Cormac is on Drive Time on his own today. We are back on Tuesday. And remember those voice notes for Kelly Harrington would be great, because we're talking to Kelly and Roddy Doyle on Tuesday. Have a great long weekend and enjoy the Halloween thing. Good luck.
Well. It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.